After an absence of more than a dozen years from the United States, the demure but exquisite Portuguese pianist Maria João Pires came to Philadelphia earlier this year to play Chopin with the Philadelphia Orchestra. In Europe, the 60-something-year-old Pires has long been considered one of the greatest living pianists, an artist who communicates deep emotions quietly. This week she announced she'll be retiring from public performances and recording in 2014. The Philadelphia Inquirer's David Patrick Stearns is a longtime admirer and has this appreciation.
Is it possible to be an anti-egotistical Buddhist and still play Chopin? One might think not. Chopin was one of the first piano virtuosos of the Romantic era, and the concertos that he wrote were star vehicles for himself and their ego magnets. Could this be a dilemma for the soft-spoken Maria João Pires, who subscribes to Buddhist philosophies and is almost as well known for her humanitarian activities as she is for her disarmingly intimate pianism? You'd think she would have evolved out of Chopin, but with her charming, almost flirtatious smile, the elegant Pires seriously disagrees.
Chopin is, before anything else, a poet. So poetry doesn't have to be egocentric, or doesn't have to be show. Okay, it's very inner music and very deep emotional music.
But were Chopin alive today, he'd get an earful from Pires. She may never forgive him for inventing the piano recital, a form to which concert pianists are obliged, but has never made sense to her. A solo recital is like a one-way conversation for her, and a very, very long one.
Not sharing stage is something very difficult for me. I don't like the idea of the soloist. If it's for a short time, okay. But what happens then? You find yourself alone. You are apart. Apart from the group, apart from community, apart from everything. So you are apart. So you become different. You become special, and if you become different and special, then you are alone. And I just don't like that.
Many pianists are used to being alone, specifically shut up in practice rooms for hours at a time. Pires had to have experienced that. She studied with some of the finest teachers, such as the great accompanist Carl Engel, but she somehow avoided the isolation.
I had no time, you know. I was always very busy with other things, and I had children very early, and I had to take care of everything, and I never had much time for the piano. I was always an amateur, somehow. I mean, it's life made me, destiny made that I did a certain career, but it was not on purpose, it was not wanted, and it was not very natural, somehow.
You must have a very natural facility for the piano, though.
No.
No?
I don't think so. I have small hands. Of course, I found my own body language with the piano and my own way of getting out of my problems, but it's still problems. Mm-hmm. You find your way, no? We all have to find our way.
And she has done so without heaven-storming octaves. Pires comes from a long line of Buddhists. Her grandfather was one, quite unusual in Portuguese culture, and her father, who died 2 weeks before she was born, left a household legacy of Chinese and Japanese Buddhist culture that he had growing up while living abroad. Pires herself began studying Buddhism when in her 40s.
I have a very strong relationship to that philosophy, you know. I don't like to say I'm a Buddhist, you know, because what you are in this sense is already taking certain limitation, you know. So I am, before anything, I'm a human being. So.
Sometimes I'm not sure what I am.
Yes, and that's nice. It's very nice, yes. It's the best thing in life, is not to be sure. And to accept it.
In North America, many know her only through her blue-chip discography on Deutsche Grammophon, where she records with only the best orchestras and conductors. There's no lack of appreciation for her art. A few years ago, when a longtime Philadelphia Chamber Music Society patron complained that there were no great Chopin pianists today, I gave her a copy of a Pirisch disc, and that patron didn't stop talking about it for a year. Many things, as it turns out, kept Pirisch away from the United States since 1999.
All these last years, the Bush years, I felt very bad about America, and I felt very angry with what's going on, you know, and that made me say, okay, I stop now.
Some heavy weather in her personal life also kept her away. For years, she lived with the violinist Augustin Dumais, who was also a close and often adversarial concert colleague. That ended, though they're still friends and recital partners. In 2006, she showed up for a concert in the Spanish university town of Salamanca, wasn't feeling well, and was rushed to the hospital, where a sure-to-be-fatal heart attack was averted by surgery. Indeed, Pirisch could have gone the way of the great Russian artist Tatiana Nikolaeva, who died in the middle of her own concert in 1993. Oddly, Pirisch sounds almost envious of Nikolaeva.
I mean, this is okay. It's not a bad way to die. She was a nice lady. Yeah, you have to die, it doesn't matter how, but I mean, if you have to survive, also you have to survive. So that's what happened to me.
Pirisch had plenty to face. Years previously, she had started a school for underprivileged children based on a farm in rural Portugal where she lived. She admits being inexperienced at running large organizations, but for reasons she can't fully explain on the record, and not really her fault, it went bad, very bad. She lost nearly everything but the farm, and 6 years later is still paying off the school's debts. She left Portugal, created a home base in Brazil, but sticks close to Europe, where her two younger sons are based. She talks about it all with a surprising lack of bitterness.
I also learned a very good lesson that everybody has to learn in life, is that it's not struggling and fighting things that you think are ideal. Struggling and fighting is not the solution. The solution is to step back, observe, know why, understand why, and then see the reasons why it happens like that, you know. And I was a fighter all my life. I think now I'm much less.
She's now working on a program that would take musicians to distressed communities in places like sub-Saharan Africa, which is yet another instance of Pirisch avoiding the glamorous capitals where careers are made. Left to her own devices, she's in the flyover zones.
Oh, I don't like cities. I can cope now better than before, being in a city, but I always have this incredible wish to have the nature, the earth, the air, the wind, the sun, everything. I have a strong relationship to nature, and in city I feel like thirsty.
That's the setting in which I first discovered Maria João Pirisch's Mozart. I was bicycling through the south of France, spending time exploring bridges dating back to the Romans, brilliantly red poppy fields, and, in a second-hand store, some of Pirisch's early recordings. For the rest of the tour, those CDs were my new friends, there for me every evening to offer what felt like my own personal guided tour through the mind of Mozart. I wanted to tell Pirisch this story during our Philadelphia interview, but instead apologize for taking up so much time. No problem for her. Time is elastic, she said. Not nearly elastic enough for me, said I, as I ran off to my next appointment. She smiled sweetly and said, that's because you are a city person.
The Philadelphia Inquirer's David Patrick Stearns.
Everything you hear on WRTI is made possible by members. Please join today.